Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1228, we present two new stories from Life Rattle writer Shane Driver. Last week, we gave you a sneak peek at the writing of Shane Driver, who will read at this year's Totally Unknown Writers Festival, when we featured the first of a series of stories written by Driver that delve into the profoundly complex tangle of love and loss within a family. Shane Driver was born in Newmarket in 1982, where he and his family lived until 1990, when they moved to Oakville. After a difficult youth, Driver decided he wanted more out of life and enrolled in college in Peterborough to study business. There, he met his longtime partner, Paulina. After graduation, Driver moved to Ottawa to earn a marketing diploma. His studies were interrupted when his father died unexpectedly from a heart attack. Driver and Paulina moved back to Mississauga. Work in sales left Driver uninspired. His worst nightmare was to spend his life in a career he hated, as his father had. With the support of his partner Paulina and his mother Charmaine, Driver returned to school, to university, and found his passion, writing. He is now enrolled in a writing and communications program, working to fulfill his dream. With a straight-ahead style, Driver can deceive you into believing that writing about a traumatic experience is simple. It isn't. Driver's ability to bring a reader, or listener in this case, to their knees is powered by his instinctive eye for catching the telling details. Just as life does, he stacks the absurdly funny right next to the gut-wrenching and leaves us reeling. At the end, Driver's heart-rending honesty and his willingness to show each character's, and by extension our own, deepest conflicts and vulnerabilities makes each word ring true. In tonight's first story, all of the interaction happens over the phone. Let's listen now as Shane Driver reads his story, The Call, tonight on Life Rattle.
The Call by Shane Driver. It's a muggy evening in July, and I couldn't be in a better mood. My dad works in sales and flew to Kentucky early in the afternoon for a trade show. I have Dad's condo all to myself for 3 days. I lounge on our 16-floor balcony overlooking 16 Mile Creek in Oakville. The moonlight bounces off the surface of the stream. Stars sparkle in the clear sky. I toke on a blunt rolled with a chocolate Philly cigar and bob my head to the Alcoholics on my Sony Discman. I inhale deeply and let the smoke rest in my lungs. I burn the blunt down to a nub and flick it over the balcony. I stroll through the living room, past the black leather couch, past the white dining room table, and into the kitchen. The stainless steel Whirlpool fridge hums and buzzes. I reach into the sandy brown pantry and grab a bag of cheese Doritos. I take the entire bag and make my way back to my room. I love watching Seinfeld after blazing a reefer. I hop into my bed with the navy blue comforter and grab the remote off my cluttered wooden desk and click on channel 28. The green numbers on my ancient alarm clock read 8:58. 2 minutes until Seinfeld. I crack open the Doritos. The bag crinkles. "Those things smell like smelly feet," I remember my mom used to say. My Green Bay Packers phone rings and startles me. Shit, I think. I check the display screen. I recognize the number. My mom. I ignore the call. The clock reads 8:59. The phone rings again. Shit, I say. I mute the TV and reach for the phone. Hello? Hi, Shane. It's Mom. Oh, hi. My parents have been divorced for 10 years, but my mom and I can't speak for 5 minutes without her ranting about my old man. Your father's a piece of shit. Your father's not a man. Your father's this. Your father's that. Sometimes I avoid her for months. Mom, I'll call you tomorrow. I'm just heading out the door, I lie. Shane, I know you're not too happy with me right now, but we need to talk. The clock reads 9 o'clock. I glance at the television set. Jerry Seinfeld stands on stage. Can we do this tomorrow? I ask. No, Shane, we have to do this now. I sense urgency in her voice and switch off the TV. Have you talked to your Uncle Bob lately? She asks. Uncle Bob, my dad's older brother by 2 years, lives in Ottawa. No, every time I talk to him, he goes off on a guilt trip about how I don't call him enough. I'll call him soon. Why? Mom pauses and whimpers. Shane, she says. Your Uncle Bob is dead. What? Your Aunt Rachel called me. Uncle Bob is dead. She's not my aunt, I say. Rachel, Uncle Bob's ex-wife, left him the year before. Mom sobs. Anger wells inside me. I wonder why she acts so devastated. I don't buy it. What happened? I ask. Is your father there? He's in Kentucky, Mom. What happened? She wails. Shane, your Uncle Bob hung himself. I try to speak. No words leave my mouth. I rise to my feet. The phone plummets to the floor and bounces on the carpet. Shane, Shane, hello? My mom's muffled voice floats in the air. She panics. Shane, Shane, are you okay? I march zombie-like to a wooden dresser in the corner of my room. A photo of Uncle Bob, my father, and I fishing in Alberta in 2002 rests on top. The three of us smile with our arms wrapped around each other. I pick up the photo and lean my back against the dresser. My knees quiver and I slide to the floor. Shane, Shane, I hear again. I clutch the photo hard to my chest and grab the phone off the floor. Mom, I say. Yes, honey. I blubber into the phone. I know, Shane, I know. It's okay, she says. I realize why my mom is so upset. Her father shot himself when she was 11 years old. He suffered from severe depression caused by irrepressible back pain. She tells me how Uncle Bob's best friend, Mike, found him hanging from the ceiling in Mike's basement. Uncle Bob moved in with his friend after the divorce. She tells me how he couldn't get used to life without Rachel. She tells me he started gambling and had racked up over $100,000 of debt. Snot dangles from my nose and tears pour down my face and roll off my chin. I take a deep breath and wipe my face with the sleeve of my t-shirt. "Mom, I gotta let you go," I say. "Shane, why don't you stay on the phone with me for a while?" "No, I have to call Dad." How the hell am I gonna tell him that his brother hung himself? "Do you want me to call him?" she asks. "No way. I'll do it." "Okay," she says. "And Mom?" "Yes, honey?" I know I've said this before, but, well, I'm sorry about your dad. "Oh, Shane, I know, but don't think of that now." "I love you, Shane," she says, "and I'm so sorry." "I love you too, Mom." I place the phone on the receiver. Pillow fights with my Uncle Bob flood my memory. As a kid, when my dad told me we were traveling to Ottawa to see him and my cousins, Jason and Tanya, I'd call my uncle immediately. "Hey, Uncle Bob, can we have a pillow fight when I come down?" I'd ask. "You betcha, pal. If you're good," he'd say. "I'll be good, I promise." "Okay, pal, then we'll have one." But you know your Uncle Bob is the all-time champion of pillow fights. You sure you want to go up against me? Jason and Tanya are on my team. "You got a deal, pal." "So your Uncle Bob loves you," he'd say. "I love you too, Uncle Bob." When we would arrive at his house, all the furniture in the living room was pushed to one side and the floor layered with sofa cushions. My uncle, my cousins, and I would flail on each other for hours. Lying on the floor in my room, I wonder why Uncle Bob hung himself. Depression runs in both sides of my family, but I had always seen Uncle Bob as a happy-go-lucky guy who loved life. The guilt of it grips me to the bone. I should have called him more. I picture my Uncle Bob hanging from a rope in the basement. The image makes me sick. I should have called him more. I think of how devastated my cousins must be. I rummage through the clutter on my desk and find the number to the Courtyard Lexington Hotel, where my dad stays. My fingers tremble as I dial. "Hello?" Dad answers in an upbeat tone after the third ring. I expected to leave a message on voicemail. "Hey, Dad," I say. "Oh, hey, pal, how are you?" Words I didn't expect to say leave my mouth. "How's the trip?" I ask. "It's okay. I'm just about to take some clients for dinner," he says. "How's it going up there?" "I'm sure you're pissed about having the place to yourself. I can come home early if you want." I say nothing. "What? It's not funny?" I say nothing. "Are you okay, pal?" he asks. I fight the urge to break down. "Dad, I got something to tell you." "Oh, no. Please tell me you didn't get arrested," he says. "No, Dad, I didn't get arrested." "Thank Christ." "Dad," I start. My hands shake so much the phone vibrates against my ear. My father interrupts me. "I'm sorry, pal," he says. "I shouldn't have said that. It's just I get so nervous when..." "Dad, it's okay," I say. "Just listen." "Sure, pal. What is it?" I take a deep breath. "Uncle Bob is dead." Silence. "Dad, are you okay?" Silence. "Dad, are you okay?" "Please, Shane. Tell me he didn't kill himself." I can't fight the tears any longer. "Oh, Dad, I'm so sorry. Uncle Bob hung himself." "Oh, God," he whimpers into the phone.
That was Shane Driver reading his story, The Call. Tonight's second story brings our narrator and his father together in the flesh. Let's listen now as Shane Driver reads his story. Thank you.
This story is called Thank You by Shane Driver. We park car and then trek through rough brush and reach the spot in the Ottawa River where my father fished when he was a kid. We enjoy a beautiful view of the Parliament buildings. An army of towering trees surrounds us. Stunning fall colors bounce off one another. I feel enclosed in a painted masterpiece. "There's a hole in these waders," I tell Dad, as we stand waist deep in the Ottawa River. "Water's leaking in." "What? We just bought those things last year." "What a piss off," he replies. "Here, take mine. I'll wear those." "No, no, I don't care. I'll wear them." "Are you sure?" Dad asks. "Yeah, I'm fine." "Any bites?" "Just a couple of nibbles. You?" "Same thing," Dad says. "But there's definitely fish out here." "Yeah, so you think?" "Funny, smartass," he says. "I'm not paying for a second diploma," Dad says, when I tell him I've enrolled in Algonquin College's marketing program in Ottawa. "I'm not asking you to," I reply. My father refers to the tuition fees he paid for me to attend Fleming College in Peterborough a couple of years before when I earned a general business diploma. Sandra and I discussed it. Sandra is my dad's new wife. They have known each other for 5 years. "We don't think you need more schooling." "I don't care what Sandra thinks I should or shouldn't do," I say. "She's not concerned with my future, Dad. I am." My father is 56 years old and works in sales. He has a great sense of humor and makes anyone around him laugh. His whole personality changes when he's with Sandra. He no longer makes the dry jokes that family and friends I used to enjoy. He's a beer and barbecue kind of guy, but since meeting her, he's switched to martinis and stuck-up parties, as he calls them. "Why do you go if you don't like them?" I ask him one night as we sit and drink a beer. "Because Sandra likes them," he says. "Do you love her?" I ask. "She's a nice lady." "So your mother found someone. Why shouldn't I?" he responds. "You deserve to be happy," I say, although I don't believe he's content with his new wife. Visits to my father in Oakville have become infrequent. When I go, I often stay at my friend Ryan's house. The two of us rarely spend time together anymore. "You're welcome to come to Sandra's house for Christmas supper with her parents," he says during the holidays. "But I'm sure you would be more comfortable at Ryan's house." I start spending Christmases at Ryan's house with his family. It becomes my second home. I'm always welcomed, but his parents must think that my own family doesn't want me around for the holidays. Christmas with me used to be so important to my father, and now he passively pushes me away. "I'm coming to see you," Dad says over the phone one evening in late September. "You are?" I say in a flat tone. "I don't sound too excited," he says. "So we'll go fishing." "That's wicked, Dad." "And guess what?" he says. "What?" "I'm coming alone. I thought it would be nice for us to spend some time, just you and me. I'll come down Friday and leave Saturday night." "Yeah, right," I say. "Now that I'm looking forward to." "I thought you would, pal." "What weekend are you coming?" I ask. "This weekend." "Sweet. Sounds good." My dad shows up late on a chilly fall evening. He arrives in his black 2000 Pontiac Bonneville. The car has tinted windows, leather seats, and chrome rims. My friends and I used to drive around in the Bonneville and call ourselves high rollers. I wait on the steps out front of my apartment building. I wear a beat-up black leather jacket over a dark blue hoodie. I live alone in a small apartment across the street from a strip mall with a 7-Eleven and Dominion grocery store. I work in the warehouse at National Grocers to pay for my rent and school. I receive aid from Ontario Student Loans. I attend school for a year and work the following semester, a routine I keep throughout college. My hood is pulled up and I bob my head to Obi Trice on my Discman when Dad drives up. I don't see him at first. Then he honks the horn. I turn and watch my father pull up with a warm smile on his face. I place my fists in the air. He keeps his left hand on the wheel and raises his right fist, our sign for years. He parks the car. I jog to the parking spot, hardly able to contain the excitement of spending a couple of days with my old man. It's been years since we have done anything like this. He opens the door and gets out of the Bonneville. He stretches his arms high above his head and groans. Dad wears an old pair of Bridgestone sweatpants and an ITL sweatshirt, both names of tire companies where he previously worked. He appears comfortable for the first time in a long while. He wraps his right arm around my head, locks his hands together, and squeezes slightly. "It's cold as a bitch down here," he says, releasing his grip. We hug long and hard. There is something about this hug that feels much better from recent times. We drink beers and eat pizza in the evening and watch Along Came a Spider with Morgan Freeman. We laugh and laugh. When it's just the two of us, no one makes me howl the way my father does. "Stop it, I can't breathe," I say. Before bed and half-wasted, we tell each other that we love one another. I sleep better than I have in a long time. I wake up at 6 a.m. against my will. "Gotta catch him early," Dad says as he sits and shakes my bed until I open my eyes. "You're crazy," I say. "Oh, come on, get up, you bum." I wake to the aroma of fresh coffee. Dad makes a huge breakfast of scrambled eggs, bacon, and toast. By 7:30, we stand in the Ottawa River. Frosty water seeps through the hole at the crotch of my chest waders. By the end of the day, My balls are going to freeze, I tell him. I told you. Why don't you give those waiters to me? No, I'm fine. I'm just kidding. We fish until about 2 p.m, catching only a couple of small rock bass. We don't care. We talk about school, work, women, and many other things. At the end of the day, I feel as though I have laughed 5 pounds away. I haven't seen my dad so happy in a long time. Back at the apartment, I prepare a rice dish for dinner that my father taught me how to make when I was 20 and trying to impress my longtime girlfriend, Paulina. I want the meal to be perfect. I chop up the garlic, roast the peppers, pan fry the beef, and add green olives, hot sauce, and a little parsley for flavor. After dinner, I walk Dad down to the car. I had a great time, pal. Me too, Dad, I say. I love you, son. I love you too, Dad. 2 weeks later, I relax on my torn, faded gray couch, watching an episode of Seinfeld. My apartment buzzer rings. I drag myself off the sofa. Hello, I say. I'm not expecting anyone. Shane, it's Clyde and Marie. Clyde is one of my father's few close friends. I've known him since I was 6 or 7. Dad told me that Clyde said he would visit me sometime. Come on up, I say. Newspapers, Harvey's wrappers, an ashtray full of cigarette butts, and a half-smoked joint litter my old splintered coffee table. A cloud of stale smoke drifts through the apartment. I quickly clear the table. I empty the trash down the garbage chute, flush the grungy smoke butts down the toilet, and hide the reefer. Knock, knock, knock. I open the door. Clyde and Marie stand and stare at me blankly. Marie wipes tears from her face with a tissue. What's the matter? I ask. Can we come in, Shane? Of course. The two of them slowly walk into the living room. Clyde turns and faces me. Marie stares at the floor. I know something is wrong, but I can't imagine what it is. Shane, your father died tonight in Florida, Clyde says. He was swimming laps in the pool at the hotel. He had a massive heart attack and drowned. I stand motionless for a moment. My knees give out from under me, and I collapse to the floor. I scream no words, just shouts of agony from within my gut. I sob uncontrollably. I stop crying and wipe the tears from my face with my shirt. I raise my head back up, and it feels like it weighs 100 pounds. I just saw him a couple weeks ago, I say feebly.
That was Shane Driver reading his story, Thank You. That concludes Life Rattle number 1228. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callis recorded Shane reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear two more new stories by Shane Driver.